Hi, this is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger at War Central. We have an interesting tape for you today. This is a unedited, uncut interview with Greta Van Susskind on Fox TV at the time of the Lefko murders in Chicago. And then we have a longer NBC interview with WMAQ-TV in Chicago, and also the Chicago Sun-Times. I think you will get a pretty good picture of where Tommy is coming from when you listen to these, and I would challenge any of the right-wing leaders to follow my suit. I don't think they have the balls, or is it cojones? Ha, ha, ha! P.O. Box 65, Fallbrook, California, 92028. No, that's 92088. And we're at war. Metzger at AOL.com, and our website is resist.com. And for a daily, almost daily, sometimes two or three days update on the internet, just send an email to warmetzger@AOL.com and say subscribe. And now on with the shoe.
Killer or killers of a federal judge's husband and mother. Police spoke a short time ago about the latest on the investigation. Fox's Jeff Goldblatt is in Chicago with the details. Jeff?
Greta, another indication today just how badly the public wants to help crack this case. We now understand from Chicago police that they have received more than 600 tips on this double murder investigation, more than 500 of them since Wednesday night's release of the composite sketch of those two men sought for questioning. Chicago Police Chief Phil Klein felt compelled today to go public to clarify a few things about these men. Things Fox News has been reporting since Thursday, that although the two men were both seen near the Lefko house the day of this double murder, they were never seen together. That the younger of the two was spotted a block north of the house around 8 a.m. inside a small red car, perhaps a Ford Focus or an Escort, and that the older guy was seen in an alley and near the side of the house. Police say they're pursuing all angles in this investigation, but continue to focus considerable manpower on white supremacist leader Matthew Hale and his followers. Hale was convicted last year of trying to hire a hitman to kill the judge after she had ruled against him in a copyright case. He has called it a heinous crime and emphatically denies any involvement. However, he's been questioned. Same goes for his family and an untold number of his followers. Law enforcement considers this case such a high priority. FBI Director Robert Mueller is being briefed three times a day that it's on the table when Mueller is discussing worldwide terrorism every morning with President Bush. Yesterday, the first of the victims, Michael Lefko, was laid to rest, memorialized as a man with a true moral compass and a devoted husband and father of five. His mother-in-law will be buried in her home state of Colorado, who at 89 and despite needing two canes to walk, was gunned down execution style along with her son-in-law, a man who was on crutches himself in order to get around. It is a crime so disturbing that one of the first officers on the scene, Greta, told me that he has never seen anything so horrific in his more than 30 years on the force. Greta.
Jeff, thank you. Now to an exclusive on-the-record investigation. We had a chance to visit the scene of this gruesome crime. Take a look. Any idea how long the family's lived here?
I don't know. They've lived here for some time. I think about somewhere in the area of 15, 20 years.
And the entrance, was it in a basement window?
There's a side entrance and a back entrance.
Break it in, but they broke in.
They found a broken window in the basement on one side of the house, and that's where they're talking about the broken glass. But yeah. A house that old, you're in with a credit card. You don't have to kick a door in. You don't have to break glass. I mean, you could pop them locks in 3 seconds if you know what you're doing.
You know, so many of these cases are done at night and streetlights matter. This is apparently broad daylight because there was a conversation with...
Certainly they knew she was alive at 10:30 in the morning.
Because?
Because there was a phone call to the house and someone, she either spoke to her mother or her husband at that time.
Is there any information as to whether any neighbors saw anything or heard anything?
The neighbors didn't see anything.
All right, you know a lot about guns. 22 caliber gun, loud?
No. Well, I'll tell you what, shoot it. It's loud enough. But inside a house in a basement, not loud at all. It's like dropping a phone book on a linoleum floor, maybe.
Police say they are investigating every possible clue in their effort to solve this mysterious double murder. One focus of that investigation has been white supremacist Matt Hale, who is currently awaiting sentencing for soliciting the murder of Judge Lefko. Our next guest has been reporting on Matt Hale for years. Mark Chase, an investigative reporter with the Times of Northwest Indiana, joins us from Chicago. Mark, what have you learned in terms of the focus on Matt Hale?
Well, Matt Hale has really not been a visible member of the white supremacy movement until around 1992. And I think it's really important for people to understand his history before you can move on from there. Matt Hale really started out as a kid who was reading Adolf Hitler books while other kids were reading about the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew. He's a guy who in 1992 finally took a step onto the public stage, was in a lot of the Central Illinois newspapers as he was campaigning for David Duke to get him on the Illinois presidential primary ballot. He's a guy who has been convicted prior to the most recent conviction of obstruction of justice before. The conviction was actually thrown out later on that year in 1992 when it was discovered that the police failed to read him his Miranda rights. It all stemmed from a fight that he and his brother had in which his brother was accused of brandishing a handgun. Police questioned Matt Hale about the incident later, and they claimed that Matt Hale lied about the incident.
He's now sitting in jail, convicted, not sentenced, for taking out our contract or soliciting someone to kill Judge Lefko. Is there any indication that he had anything to do at all with this double homicide?
It's really hard to say at this point. I mean, the prevailing theory certainly seems to be that perhaps a member of his organization had something to do with this. I think that it's really clear that it would have been very difficult for him to communicate anything like this. But in terms of how much he may or may not have had to do with this, it's very hard to tell.
Is he popular on the Internet among the white supremacy organizations or groups?
Well, you know, the World Church of the Creator, as it was it used to be called, was one of the first white supremacy groups to really use the web to forward their ideologies and to get their word out there, and as kind of a recruitment tool. So, yeah, over the years, it really has been known as an organization that has been very good at using the web for promoting their ideals.
All right, Mark, thank you. Coming up, is white supremacist Matt Hale telling police everything he knows about these murders? His mother goes on the record. That's next. And later, an on-the-record exclusive. We're going to take you inside San Quentin Prison to show you exactly what Scott Peterson will see. Supremacist Matt Hale is behind bars in Chicago awaiting sentencing for soliciting the murder of Judge Lefko. FBI agents questioned Hale on Friday about the execution-style murders of the judge's husband and mother. Does Hale know anything that could help police solve this tragic and violent crime? Matthew Hale's mother, Evelyn Hutchinson, joins us now from Illinois. Evelyn, when was the last time you spoke to your son?
I talked to him last Thursday on the telephone.
Did he say anything at all about Judge Lefko, about the murder of her husband and mother?
What he said was, and I think you have the statement that he made, he said that he was very despondent and was not eating at first right after he heard the news, but he was doing better, and he gave the statement that I was to give to the media, which I did.
He's pending sentencing, is that right?
Yes. Yes, he is, and that's why this is ridiculous for them to spend any time trying to decide if he had something to do with this, because he's under the SAMS, number one. He's under the SAMS, and everything is monitored. His mail is monitored. His telephone calls are listened to by two FBI agents. There wouldn't be any way that he could get any message to anybody to do this, and wouldn't he be kind of stupid to do this, because his sentencing is coming up April the 6th, and why would he be foolish enough to do something like this, which possibly could enhance his sentence? I believe that they should stop looking at him, who I believe is innocent, and get with somebody possibly that has done this crime.
What is the World Church of the Creator?
What is the World Church of the Creator? That was the name of his organization. I can't tell you anything more. That's what it was. It was his organization. It was the name of his organization.
And what did his organization believe
in? And
what
is it?
Yeah, what is it? What did they advance, or what did they believe in?
They believe in the races remaining separate. So he's a white separatist. He's not a white supremacist. He is a white separatist. He believes that they should remain with their own. That is exactly what he believes. He is not a violent person. He has always preached nonviolence to his members.
So what do you think happened? What's your theory on what happened to the judge's husband and mother?
I'm going to be very honest. I believe that the prosecutor in Matt's case wanted something to enhance his sentence, for the judge to enhance his sentence, and I believe that the Jewish Defense League or FBI have put someone up to doing this. And while everybody's saying, oh, that can't be true, let's remember that not a couple of weeks ago, it was in the paper that the FBI had put a guy on death row in Chicago for 8 years, and that was reversed. And 3 weeks ago, there was a CIA agent that was working with them, and the prosecutor deliberately lied about him and sent him away to prison for 20 years. So people should not be so naive as to think that this could not happen. And so that's what my concern is, that he will now have an enhanced sentence because of just the thought that he might have something to do with these killings. And he does not. He doesn't believe in it. He was very sad about it, and I certainly have been, and I want them to get off their duff and find out who did this. All and there right. are, you got to remember, there are a lot of white supremacist groups that need to be looked into, and some of them do violent things. Matt does not, and he does not believe in it, and he went to law school to get his law degree, to practice law, and to make legal change. And that has been kept from him.
All right, so there are two. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems under your theory, it can either be supporters of Matt, not Matt, or it can be someone who is, like the prosecutor, or some organization you think is trying to get Matt. Is that right? Is that your two categories?
Well, let me put it this way. The Jewish Defense League has been after him for years. It followed him to all of his public speaking engagements. And yes, I think that's a possibility.
Do you have any proof of that other than your suspicion?
No, I do not. Absolutely, and that is my opinion. His supporters would not do this. Number one, it would hurt Matt. But his supporters have long since been gone. They are terrified that the government will do the same thing to them that they did with Matt. And you got to remember, during his trial, he did not solicit the judge's murder. Actually, Tony the Mole from the FBI repeatedly sent Tony back to solicit Matt. And Matt never one time ever brought the subject up, and he never did ask Tony or approve of Tony going to do anything to anybody.
All right,
so everybody needs to read the trial transcript.
All right, Evelyn, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it. Let's bring back our panel. In Chicago, Anna Betrez Cholo of the Chicago Tribune and private investigator Paul Cialino. In Detroit, criminal defense attorney Jeff Feiger. In New York, forensic pathologist Dr. Michael Bodden. And in L.A., former San Francisco assistant DA Jim Hammer. Anna, you have followed this case. You've even talked to the judge. What's your thought, having listened to Evelyn talk about her son?
I actually hesitate to offer any opinions. Any personal opinions? I'm a journalist.
Let me just stop for a second. Are there any facts to support? You can tell me that in your research investigation. Any facts to support anything that she has said about anyone out to get Matt Hale?
Honestly, Greta, I have been working the family and friends angle. I went to the funeral yesterday, and I've been talking to friends. I talked to Joan last time on Friday. I really can't offer anything on the investigation itself. I'm sorry.
I can, Greta.
Go ahead.
Greta, I'd like to respond. His followers aren't violent. That's crap, okay? One of his followers killed a bunch of people up in Evanston a few years ago in the name of that church or organization or whatever the hell they're calling it. Okay, so to say that, his followers are nonviolent guys and wouldn't do something like that is just ludicrous. It's crazy.
Amen.
It's insane stuff. Ask Mrs. Birdsong where her husband is these days, and Mrs. Birdsong's children where their dad is, because some nut went up there that works for this guy or was affiliated with his church and blew his brains out because he's a black guy.
Jeff, is there any way you can get information out of the facility that he's in, Matt Hale's in?
I don't think any meaningful information, but the police and the FBI obviously think, and I think it's a good guess, that this isn't a random offense, that Judge Lefkow's family was assassinated as a result of right-wing terrorists who operate within the United States, which brings a good point. I mean, maybe we've really focused our frenzy not on the outside, not on Middle Eastern terrorists, but on domestic terrorists.
All right, we need to take a quick break. Anna, thank you. The rest of the panel, stand by. Coming up, why did the leader of the white Aryan resistance post Judge Lefkow's home address on the Internet? We're going to speak to the white supremacists who did that. That's next. And later, Dennis Rader has been charged with 10 murders. How did the notorious beat gun down the husband and mother of a federal judge, Joan Lefkow, last week? Last year, the leader of a white supremacist group put Judge Lefkoe's address on the Internet. Why did he do that? Tom Metzger, director of the White Aryan Resistance, joins us now from Chicago. Tom, before I ask you that question, does your organization have anything to do with Matt Hale's the World Church of Creator?
Well, we're good friends, and I know many people of his organization, and I've had a high regard for their organization ever since Ben Klassen created it. He was a good friend of mine.
All right. Did you put Judge Lefkoe's home address on the Internet?
Yes, I received an email from someone. It had been already on the Internet for some time, and I sent an email back and told them that it was a bad idea to put his names on the Internet and a bad idea to picket the judge's house.
So why did you, if you thought it was a bad idea, Tom, why did you do it?
It was already been on the Internet all over the place. It was an email I received, and you automatically, when you return an email, many times that's information's in there. It's totally legal to do it anyhow. But I didn't do it out of any desire to cause her a problem.
Well, when you say that you sent an email back, was it just simply a reply email, or that you mean you actually have a website for your organization? Did you actually post it on your website for your organization so that if you went to that website, you'd see it?
I don't recall. I was asked that today. I forgot all about this. It was back in 2003 this all happened. Don't get me wrong. I have no love for federal judges. I believe the federal judiciary in this country is a dictatorship and is destroying the United States. And so, but as far as promoting to murder them, no. I believe the people should rise up and take them out of office.
And does that include violence or not violence in terms of taking them out of office, in your opinion?
Well, we're generally speaking here, and I think the time will come in this country where there's going to have to be major readjustments in the system. And one of those readjustments is the tremendous power exerted by federal judges across the country. Even Thomas Jefferson said the Supreme Court is 9 old men who can decide anything means anything. So as far as federal judges, I have no use for them.
What was your personal reaction when you heard that Judge Lefkoe's family had been murdered, mother and husband?
Well, I was shocked. It's surprising, and it sounded like a Colombian drug hit to me. You know?
Did you feel bad? I mean, did you feel bad for them?
Well, in a sort of a way. I mean, I don't know these people. I mean, there's people killed all the time all over the country. And usually, unless you know them personally or have some business with them, you don't think too much about it.
And in terms of your followers and emails that you've seen, has there been any cheering or any sort of sense of happiness that this has happened?
No, I haven't seen anything like that. I get hundreds of emails during the week, and I have not seen anything like that. There might have been some around, but I haven't really seen them. I've been on the road for a few days, so I have been out of touch with a lot of that.
Oh, Tom, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Let's bring back our panel. Jeff, any thoughts about posting judges, federal judges' home addresses on the Internet?
Well, he did obviously mean to cause her problems, and he's being disingenuous by saying otherwise. Frankly, although I didn't agree with one single thing he said, I think he's being pretty honest, and it's pretty frightening what he is saying. And I think that people who feel like him are far more pervasive than we might care to admit, and therefore there is some problems in this country.
Jim, it's really almost, I mean, it's sort of unthinkable in terms of at least, you know, a home address of a federal judge being put out there. It's, I mean, they're awfully vulnerable.
It is, but again, in the age of the Internet, whether or not he posted it, it's going to get out. As a prosecutor, I felt at fear at times. I mean, I carried a gun at times. I know judges in San Francisco who carried guns in gang cases. As to Matt Hale's mother, you know, I hate to beat up on someone's mom, but the fruit doesn't fall very far from the tree in this case. Her son's been convicted of hiring a hitman to kill a judge, and she blames Jews. I mean, I just want to call her for what she is. She's a racist, and her son comes from her, and I think it's despicable.
Dr. Bodden?
Well, I think that this was an intended hit by amateurs, not by professionals. And as Paul pointed out, even the break-in was amateurish through the glass. The fact that people in the neighborhood saw these two people, whether they were acting in concert or not, is a sign of amateurism. And so I think these are bad guys who intended to kill, I think, the judge and got there too early and waited around a while because they had to bring the walking disabled mother and husband down into the basement, killed them, and then somehow they got spooked and left before the judge arrived. So they didn't do what they intended to do.
Paul, is there any talk in Chicago? I mean, obviously it's focused on Matthew Hale, but they've got to look at everything, including the simple breaking and entering, burglary turned into a murder. But is there any talk among the police investigators that this is something else?
Well, I do believe it's a problem focusing on one person, individual, or group, okay? Because we see this over and over and over again. But they're exploring other things. The problem we have right now is you have the federal government involved in a big way in a murder investigation. And frankly, they could take 7 violent crime detectives in Chicago and do just as good a job with them 7 as they can with 700 people stepping on the pie. And, you know, there's too many chefs in the kitchen right now. And that's the problem the Chicago police are having, I believe.
Paul, Jeff Goldblatt reported an awful lot of tips are coming in, especially on these sketches. We've got the 2 sketches up right now on the screen. Are the police making any sort of, are they giving you any sort of sense, because I know you got your ear to the ground there, that they are moving, that they're actually gaining ground on this investigation?
Greta, that's the only game in town are them 2 sketches right now, and that's why the police are holding press conferences and the FBI's, you know, putting out the dog and pony. That's it. They need, if the public doesn't call in and solve this one right now, or there's not an informant involved, or some girlfriend calling up on somebody, it's going to be a tough case to break.
Are you pessimistic then, Paul, at this point?
You know what? I'm not the kind of, I don't believe this thing's got to be solved in 3 days or 3 weeks. You take your time, you do it right, and you ignore the media and you ignore the public pressure, if there is any, or the perception of public pressure, and you'll solve the crime eventually. Believe me, these guys are not rocket scientists. They can't help themselves. They're basically idiots,
and
they're going to talk about it, and they're going to brag about it, or they're going to write about it.
All right, panel, thank you very much.
You talking about blacks that might have done it?
No, I'm talking about you guys.
Panel, I got to go. Up next, Scott Peterson will learn.
Well, that was a little go-round we had there in Chicago, and isn't that interesting? They had 5 or 6 experts, including Mark Furman, who I sort of supported in the O.J. trial, but I wouldn't support his ass anymore. And, of course, the attorney for Dr. Kevorkian, who I support Dr. Kevorkian, but his attorney is a first-class asshole. And then I had a detective sitting right next to me. They had us on 2 stools right up against each other, and they try to make it look like we're all separated. But anyhow, he was a first-class jerk that was just salivating at the idea of pinning this on racist. And of course they love that word white supremacist. I think I'm going to copyright that name. Anyhow, that was Greta Van Susskind. Boy, they dropped that story fast. Well, next we were contacted while I was in the Midwest by Carol Marin. She's a political columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. And she's also a reporter for Channel 5 WMAQ in Chicago. And she wanted desperately to talk to me. So the other one, they took me all the way to Chicago from central Indiana in a limo for the Greta Van Susskind show. Anyhow, the Carol Marin came all the way down to where I was at, and we met in a hotel. And they set up all this equipment and everything, and we did an interview. And I think it's a very revealing interview, and I think it is pointing out the way we should respond to the media and never back down. So here we go.
On the Internet, there's, I think you see updates on our website.
I've seen some of them. I didn't see the J.B. Stoner thing, but maybe I just missed it.
Well, we put out updates about every 2 days.
Are you the person who does that? Or?
Most of the time, yeah.
So you're your own webmaster?
No, I have a webmaster. They do all the web work, but I do write and gather the news and edit it and consolidate it and pass it along.
All of those things.
You were on Van Susskind's show last Sunday night. Was it Sunday night? I lose track of time. Yes, I was on there.
Yeah,
Sunday. Did you do that from Chicago?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And who were you on with? Just her or another folks?
No, there were 4 people from different places in the country. Dr. Kevorkian, the lawyer, I always forget his name. He was there, and some forensic expert was there, and a private detective from Chicago.
Was it Paul Cialino?
I believe it was.
Yeah. He's been on our show pretty good lately.
Yes, and there was another one. I forget who it was.
The lady reporter from Chicago.
No, not among the interviewers, was she? You know, one of the actual shows. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Do you remember who that was?
What paper was she?
I have a call.
She had the red hair, she had her two kids with her.
So you have a lot of family here, Mr. Messer?
Well, around the whole Midwest, I've got family. Yeah. Yeah. And the Northwest, too.
So you come in a lot or a little?
No, every 2 months.
Yeah. So
Mr.
Glenn is Greta Van Susteren thing. She was in the Lefko neighborhood, as I was told. Right?
She did that.
Yeah. Eric, there's a chair for you to sit in.
Okay. Okay.
They showed that, yes.
She did.
She was there with the detective.
Losing my typical.
Commenting on.
On how that went.
Yes.
The so are you headed back to California after this, or
the weekend?
The weekend.
Right.
Okay. Well, I will read that. Well, Vince is going to tell us when we can.
We're rolling.
All right.
Hang on, just 1 second. Let's all get settled.
Too much stuff. This will be on tomorrow night in Chicago at 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Do you think any of it will go network?
It may. You never know because because we're an NBC owned and operated station. I'm also a political columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Well, I see.
And so that some of this may also make its way into print as well as television. My deadlines are, I write for Wednesdays and Thursdays, so I have a piece in today's paper on Illinois politics. This may turn into a Friday piece. I'm just not certain yet.
Sure.
But I'll leave you my card also so that you can.
I can always download it from the web.
Right. I'm on the in the editorial section, the commentary section of the Chicago Sun-Times.
Right.
And you can certainly pick up NBC off the web.
Yes.
And
audio's good and clean?
Yes, sir.
All right. And this is Thomas Metzger, M-E-T-Z-G-E-R.
Correct.
Mr. Metzger. Will you give me your exact title as you like to use it?
I'm the founder of White Aryan Resistance, which is a voluntary association of independent people who work on the one issue of race. On many other issues they may disagree on. On the overriding welfare of the white race, they work together.
Have you, in the last week, been contacted by the FBI or the U.S. Attorney's Office or any federal investigative agency?
No.
Do you know anyone who has?
I heard that one lady from Chicago was contacted.
Would that be Lisa Turner from the World Church of the Creator?
I'm not sure because the person contacts me under an email. I don't know what the real name is.
The person who was contacted by the FBI, was it the FBI that came to them? Or to
evidently, that's what they told me in an email.
And what did they say in the email about what federal investigators were asking?
Well, they didn't really say much at all about that. They saw my picture on their wall, and they said, oh, is that Tom Metzger? He looks younger than I thought he was. That's all I got out of it.
She was contacting you because?
Well, there's a lot of cross-pollination among groups and individuals on the Internet. And since I put an update together and then put it back out for everybody to read, she contacts me. She lets me know what's going on with Matt, too.
Do you know Matt Hill?
Yes, I met him one time in Osceola, Indiana, about 2 years ago. And I think I've corresponded with him maybe once.
And so how would you describe your relationship with Matt Hill?
Well, it's more of the organization. I was very good friends with the founder of COTC, Ben Klassen. we work together, not in the same organization, but we did work together for years, and I had a very high regard for him.
COTC, which was the precursor of World Church of the Creator?
Right.
COTC stands for, forgive me for not remembering.
Church of the Creator.
Oh, I always think it was World Church, so sorry.
Well, they added that later, World Church of the Creator.
So you had a relationship or some sort of alliance with the World Church of the Creator, the Church of the Creator, going back to its inception?
Way back into about 1971, when he first wrote the book, Nature's Eternal Religion, and then after that he wrote The White Man's Bible, and we used to distribute the books and newspapers just as a friendly gesture. I never joined the church. But I agree with most or much of what they promote.
The federal government believes what they promote is violence.
Well, the federal government ought to be able to recognize violence because they promote more violence than any other group in the country. I'm sure they could recognize violence. But per capita, I think you'll find many more Republican Party members and Democrat Party members that have committed a higher percentage of felonies than people on the COTC.
When did you first hear of the Lefko murders?
Well, I think it was on the web right after it happened, whatever that date was.
And if you could summarize sort of what you have said or what you have posted on the web with regard to that.
Well, back in 2003, I received an email of information that Matt Hale had put on the web. And it had talked about her address and maybe demonstrating in front of her house. And I put in my update a response to say that I didn't think that was too good of an idea.
Why not?
It's just too close. I mean, we talk tough, and we may name names, but we don't really advocate going to a person's house and demonstrating, things like that. Because it could lead to problems with the police and like that.
You yourself posted Judge Lefko's address on your website.
Well, it was what I received from Matt's information. It was not illegal to do so, and it wasn't put there as an idea to give her trouble. It was the response is what was important, that I was saying this is not a good idea to do. It had already been done. It was all over the web. Everybody in the country that's involved in racial politics had seen it, so it wasn't something brand new.
At the same time, there is a firm conviction on the part of many that the only reason to put a judge's name and address anywhere in such a public forum is to invite harm.
Well, I've put many police officers and many judges, probably in the past, addresses and so forth on the internet, because they know exactly where we're at as common lowly citizens all the time. So I don't put government officials above the local carpenter, the local plumber, or anyone else. And so if they harass us, then there's no reason why they shouldn't have their addresses put on the web. I don't see Ms. Lefko as a real problem because it seemed like she had sided with Matt Hale in this case. So I personally would have not have promoted it. But I have no use for federal judges. Federal judges, if you want democracy, have done more to destroy democracy in this country than any other government institution because it's a judicial tyranny.
In what manner?
Well, in California, we pass initiatives all the time. Well, millions of people vote for initiative. And almost every time a federal judge, one lowly federal judge, will knock out the initiative. The will of the people is subverted by federal judges. And that's not democracy.
For some people, that will seem like a very mixed message, that you wouldn't have encouraged what happened to her to have happened, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she doesn't invite much sympathy from you.
No federal judge does. But I'd like to see the totality of the problem taken care of, to where these people's powers are brought down. you know, even talking to democracy, this is supposed to be a republic, and democracy was the most hated form of government by our founding fathers, and even U.S. Army up until the early 20s. So the tyranny of federal judges, I think, are one of the main things that are destroying this country, and so I certainly have no sympathy for them.
Is Judge Lefkoe's address still up on your website?
I don't think so, but I'll put it back up if people want to see the email, because they should read what I said. It's not so much what was came into me, it's what I said back. Nobody seems to talk about that, but I said I don't think it was a good idea.
Given what you believe in, given what some of your followers have done in the name of what you believe, is this not sort of a grave risk in terms of future threats on judges?
Well, I think that all the people in the U.S. government are looking at problems from within this country, not just judges. We're not happy with the alien government, we call it, in Washington, and we're not sympathetic to the goals of imperialism and bombing Iraq and pushing ourselves all over the world as a military power, being the most violent organization in the country. We're not happy with this government, and we'd like to change it. We'll have to go back to the drawing board one of these days, because they've destroyed the Constitution.
Is violence a vehicle to make that change possible?
There is no great thing that ever happened in the history of the world that hasn't included some violence. I think most people that are involved in movements, or great movements, do everything they can to stay away from violence. But if it comes to the point where it's either the destruction of your race and your people and the government, then they have a problem. And they're going to have a problem from so many different groups. They've opened the borders to so many different religions and races, nationalities, bringing in all their problems to this country. And gradually, it will destroy this country. It will bring the government down.
What will save this country?
At this point, the country will be here, but the system will be destroyed. There's nothing that can save the system now. They've gone too far.
And so how did the system finally get changed?
Just hang on just one second.
We just turned it off.
Thanks.
How does the system become this changed?
Well, you'll have to go to resist.com and or order my newspaper, and they can keep up on these ideas, because we have all kinds of think tank authors writing and so forth. I think the same way it always goes. It goes from republic to democracy to dictatorship. This country is becoming a dictatorship, and that will be the only way they'll be able to hold all the factions at bay.
And the violence that occurred against Judge Lefkoe's family, if it turns out that that violence was perpetrated by someone in the white, far-right movement of this country, will that be a good thing in your view?
Well, first of all, don't put me in the right, because some of my biggest enemies in the country are on the right.
So you're sort of in the left and the right, correct?
I have probably more left-wing positions than right, to be perfectly honest.
How would you describe them? I'd rather use your words anyway.
Of my position?
There are all sorts of descriptors out there for you.
Yeah.
You know, race hate, Aryan movement, Aryan resistance. But I'd rather hear how you...
Well, I'm a racial separatist, and I'm anti-capitalist, and I'm anti-Marxist. I'm maybe a populist, if you want to put a label on it.
And when it comes to race and race hate?
Well, hate is subjective. I mean... certainly, there seems to be tens of thousands of people that hate Matt Hale, but I guess that's okay if you think you're righteous enough to hate someone like that. And there's certainly lots of people who hate me. So tossing the word hate, there's different types of hate, too. There's hatred because you don't like what somebody is doing, and then there's hatred you want to go over and kill them. So hatred spans a lot of territory.
From your standpoint, what's what we would call constructive hate versus destructive hate?
Well, our founding fathers hated the British. they hated what they were doing to them. And so they rose up and had a revolution. The North and the South, there was a type of hatred exuded there. And so they had a war. That's not hatred, you know, hundreds of thousands of people dying and being blown to bits. I don't know what is. The United States hates Iraq, as far as I'm concerned, because they've done more to kill people in Iraq than anything else.
In the case in Portland, Oregon, in 1990, the case that you lost,
yes,
you've been at the receiving end of a judge's verdict that didn't work out for you, correct?
Right.
And you're still paying for that in financial terms.
Well, I don't talk about that, but I don't post their name. I never posted the name, an address of the judge. I don't know where he lives.
If you did know where he lived, would you post it?
Oh, I could find out very, very simply. We have our ways. Because we're not a membership organization. We operate as individuals in small cells, and we encourage our people to dig in and be in the police, be in the colleges, be in the workforce, be in the military, but keep your mouth shut. And so we have an ability to gain a lot of information.
To what end?
Well, if you feel you're fighting a type of war, you must have intelligence. And we must have a lot of intelligence because the other side is certainly always trying to get intelligence on us.
Have you ever in your career said in a direct way, go out and hurt someone?
No, in fact, that's what's so ridiculous about the case in Portland. There was perjury in Portland, and the jury bought it. I never instructed anybody to go out and hurt anybody. I said, if you're attacked and you can't get out of it, then you're going to have to use whatever violence you have to use. But anyone who knows me and tells the truth knows I have never told anybody to go out and hurt anybody.
Did you have to for them to take the message away that that was a good thing?
No, because a lot of people have done things like that, and I was furious with them because they gave us bad publicity without gaining much, where people go out and get into fights in the street, beat people up and like that, and that's nonsensical. We're talking about changing a system here, not fighting from one block to another.
There were those who saw a corollary between Matt Hale and the Benjamin Smith incident and your court case and the Ethiopian man's death. Is there a comparison to be made?
I don't see how it is. It's not very close if there is. I think that Mr. Smith, now here again, this whole trademark thing started, and I don't even know how they got this trademark thing going because the COTC had been that way since 71. But the Anti-Defamation League of Benai Prith was able to get this little unknown group to somehow get into this trademark. It was all a thing to get Matt Hale. So one thing led to another thing, and one thing led to another thing, and now at the end, maybe because of that, there is a direct connection that the people died. This happens all the time.
In 1 second, which is all these things, the mics pick up a little too well.
I know.
And it sounds like you're in the middle of a wind tunnel and it's not good.
I know.
Okay. I'm sorry, you were saying that.
Well, I'm saying that, you know, when an animal's in a cage, if you every day you go by, you jab it with a stick, the chances are that animal may get out of there one day and do you harm. It started with this silly trademark thing, which I would have advised Matt Hale simply change the name and go on, even though it's frustrating. But one thing led to another and another and another, and then who knows who killed them, but they could be directly connected to this evolution of things that happened. I have fought the IRS. They've seized my house twice in the old days. I fought a civil case, which I was innocent of. Obviously, my wife died. They took my home. They took my business. If I had not been in a lot of self-control, I could very easily have gone out and done something extremely violent. But I knew that's what the enemy wanted me to do. And by driving me from one little step right up the line, across the line into illegal activity, then they would have me out of the game, and I won't allow that.
Some of the people that you identify as the enemy see people like you as instigators of violence. You might not commit it yourself, you might not directly tell someone else to, but it's implicit in your messages.
That's sort of silly when you watch television and watch all the kinds of ways you can murder somebody, and every political conspiracy in the world is shown on the fiction TV that are far better at instigating someone than I could be.
Do you have a view on Hal Turner?
Well, Hal Turner is a right-wing conservative. I'm not. He expresses his opinions. I heard what how he expressed himself. I thought, boy, that's really way out. But I can't. He has his free speech, and as long as he hasn't disobeyed a law, well, I guess he's free to say it. I would not have said what he said. I would say I don't like federal judges, generally speaking, but I would not have made those comments.
The comments that he endorses the killing of federal judges?
Right.
He posted 3 federal judges on his website recently, 2 of them from Chicago. Do you approve of that?
No, I didn't approve of Matt doing it. And that's what I said in my email. The public has to understand we want the whole federal judiciary system reexamined and changed. And you can't do that without getting a real strong push from the people. And taking it one judge at a time doesn't do any good. However, you should expose the crimes done under color of law by federal judges. I think that's important.
When, as in the Portland case, skinheads who are followers of you and your philosophy beat to death an Ethiopian man.
I never met those people. I never talked to them. Never been to Portland. There was one kid who came up from California who was hired by Morris Deese to testify. He wasn't even with them when the fight took place, but yet I was supposed to have sent him as an agent. It's so ridiculous. It never would have played. If they'd have tried that case in L.A., I'd have won. But Portland's the most liberal town in the country as far as I'm concerned, and they scared the people to death, you know.
So you think the skinheads in question were framed? Or do you think you were invoked improperly as part of this?
Well, both. It was a manslaughter case. So if it had been a white group, and this was a white group, and the same thing would have happened, there would have still been a fight in the street and had nothing to do with politics or race.
In any of these cases that you have been attached to or people have invoked your name, do you ever feel, or do you ever even for a moment say, maybe even indirectly, there is some blood on my hands?
Well, I think that there's thousands of people that are political activists that would say, well, maybe there is. I don't know. But
would it bother you?
No. Because when you're in an ideological war, there's going to be problems. And there's just no way of stopping it.
When you say problems, you mean violence?
Sometimes, yes.
And or death?
Possibly. And sometimes it's nonsensical, and sometimes maybe not.
But if somebody said to you, Tom Metzger, you really have blood on your hands in some of this, that wouldn't bother you?
No, because I feel very honest about what I've done, and I have not told or encouraged or behind closed doors told anybody to go out and kill anybody. If I had, there'd be a lot of dead people in this country, because there are a lot of people that listen to me and probably would kill people. And the very fact that they haven't proves that I have not done this.
Have you celebrated any of those killings?
I can't think of any I celebrated. In fact, when the Mark Ohana died, assassinated in New York City, and the JDL was an arch enemy of ours, some people said were sort of, you know, they were cheering, and I said, well, you know, I got to admit, he was a soldier, and he fought for what he believed in, so for that, I must respect him, even if I didn't agree with him, even if I hated him. He believed in what he was doing, and he died for it. And so that's usually the way I look at these things.
Because you see yourself as a soldier, too?
Yes.
Have you always seen yourself that way?
Well, I didn't start out that way. I started out fighting the IRS back in the 70s when the IRS was seizing people's businesses and their homes and so forth. And I joined groups that went out and put rings around their houses of people to keep the IRS away. We went to the auctions where they were trying to auction people's property off and stop the auctions. And that's sort of the way I started. And then one thing led to another, to where I had to fight the IRS, and then they seized my house. I got my house back. Then later they seized it again and tried to goad me into some kind of violent reaction, which I did not fall into.
After the Portland case?
Well, no, this
was long before.
That was way back in the 70s.
So your house was seized twice even before the Portland case?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So every step of the way, the government has encouraged me to become more fanatical because of things they've done to me personally. And I have become more fanatical. And so I simply say, if the government didn't like me, they shouldn't have created me. Sort of like Jesse James, when the government blew up his house and maimed his mother, and he'd already come out of the bitter civil war. See, we create terrorists. This government, in the anti-terrorist program the government's put on, they're creating far more terrorists all over the world, and in the United States.
Would you call yourself a terrorist?
I'm an ideological terrorist.
What's the difference between an ideological terrorist and a terrorist?
Well, I fight with ideas, and I thought that's the way we're supposed to fight, you know.
But at the same time, you see the sometimes unintended and sometimes intended consequences of that being violence.
I believe I'm responsible for my actions. And I believe every individual in this country is responsible for their own actions. And if you get far away from that, you just get into a swamp where you can't get out. We're all responsible for our own acts. And people, after they can digest, they go to the library and read violent things, and they may become violent. They can read so-called loving things and go out loving. I mean, they're sex maniacs. Who knows? But they're responsible for their own acts.
You don't mind calling yourself a fanatic?
No. Fanatic is a good term. Baseball would be nowhere without fanatics. So I'm a fan. Let's put it that way.
But with regard to your ideological positions, you're a fanatic.
Yes, and I, as a racial separatist, I go all over the country and meet. I met, you know, spoke to the Black Panther National Convention a few years ago. I've been with the Muslims many times, and I've been with the Republican New Africa, and I'm willing to meet all these racial groups because I don't hate them, but we are separatists, and we want to be separate from the other races.
And so Louis Farrakhan you've met with as well?
Not him directly, but his aides, some of his top people.
At the Nation of Islam.
Right. I was invited to, I think it was 84, 85, they were going to have me give a speech at the Muslim National Convention, but something happened, it didn't go through.
Over the years, have you gotten a lot of federal subpoenas?
I've been before two, maybe three federal grand juries.
Had a lot of FBI agents knock on your door, IRS agents?
Well, for a little bit, yeah, but they quit because I have a motto, and it's called five words. And all you say to a federal agent when they come around is, well, you can't come in, and I have nothing to say. That's all you, just like any attorney would tell you to tell them. I have nothing to say. The only people who seem to get in trouble with these federal people, including Martha, is people who lie to them or give them false information. But you should never talk to an FBI agent other than saying, I have nothing to say.
Given the conjecture, given the questions of the Lefkoe murders, do you think all of this is kind of a shot in the arm for this movement, your movement?
I don't know how it's going to play out, because obviously it's such the propaganda now being put out is so anti-Matt Hale. Poor guy, jeez. The whole thing was a scam, and he had the FBI informant there pay $50,000 to say he was going to kill the judge and all that, and now this, now they're really trying to bury him. I know I will help the CLTC. Anything they need, I will help them get it. I'm a friend of the CLTC. I believe in their what they preach and like that. Whether it hurts us or helps us, we'll all go on. Whether we're in jail or in prison, we've got a lot of people in prison, and they're our comrades.
In this movement, a lot of the old leaders are dead. A lot of the current leaders are getting a little older.
Including me.
Including you. Is this a movement, or is this just a ghost of what it was?
The old right wing is dying, and fortunately that's good in a way, even though a lot of these people have been friends of mine. We're looking at a revolutionary struggle, not a conservative right-wing thing. They keep calling us right-wingers. That drives me nuts. I was against the arms race with Russia. I was against the invasions in Central America. I opposed Reagan. I ran for Congress on the Democratic ticket in 1980 and won the Democratic nomination for Congress.
I'm sure the Democrats were pleased.
Oh, yeah, they loved that. But the people voted for me.
In terms of the Aryan nations, though, Covenant, Why don't you change tapes? Was Richard Butler a friend?
Yes, he was. We disagree. I'm an atheist. He's not. He's Christian.
But he's dead now, isn't he?
He's dead. Yeah.
We interviewed him years ago in Portland.
Yes, about a year ago.
That's right. I thought so.
Yeah.
Since he was released from prison. Right? Yeah. Well,
no, wait a minute. He didn't go to prison.
Richard Butler did?
No.
He didn't?
No, they tried it at Fort Smith. And they acquitted them in Fort Smith.
Oh, I thought Butler did, and that.
No.
Okay.
No.
Then I.
Bob Miles from Howell, Michigan, who's been dead about 10 years, he did 10 years in the federal pen.
Hmm. Let me switch this one. Interesting. For some reason, I would have sworn that he did. Was he incarcerated pending his trial? Is that what I'm thinking of?
No. Well, he was out on his own recognizance or whatever.
Help me make the distinctions, then, between groups like Aryan Nations, the old Covenant Sword and Arm of the Lord, the Christian Patriots Defense League, the Alliance, the Klan. Is this all a spectrum?
It is a spectrum, and it runs a gamut from right-wing conservatives over to left-wing environmental racists. I mean, so there's a lot of different people, a lot of different ways that these people think about things, but much of it in the past, and I came out of the right-wing conservative element of it, and the Christian-oriented, but the Christian-oriented part of it is dropping by the wayside, and the conservative, we recognize the conservatives now to be really almost our enemies in those cases, and they become as bad as the liberals as far as we're concerned. So now as a new group of people internationally, not just nationally, that are people who are, they're not going into the religion thing big time. If they want to be religious, that's their own private business. But
like the identity movement.
Yeah, we won't tolerate that taking over and running the show. Okay, ours is simply race. The best interest of the white race worldwide. We call it pan-Aryanism. And any group that wants to work with us, or any individual wants to work on that level, fine. Russia, if you want to be a red racist, that's fine with us. We don't care. If you want to be a socialist racist from Sweden, that's fine with us. We don't make a judgment on that. We believe that white people, wherever they are in the world, have to decide what government they want.
And so what unites all of these different organizations along this spectrum is race.
Absolutely.
And would it go too far to say race hate?
Well, we love our friends and hate our enemies.
And are your enemies anyone other than the white race?
Well, and some of our friends are other than the white. We have a lot of separatist non-whites who we get along with fine.
As long as you're a separatist.
A separatist, yes.
So if you're a black separatist, an Hispanic separatist, an Asian separatist,
right.
That's fine.
We don't want power over other people. We want separation. We want the black nation to have their nation and rule over their people themselves, their own police, their own military, everything. Or the Hispanics, the non-white Hispanics, the same thing. What we're offering is something they've never been offered before. They've been offered white imperialism before, and we're not white imperialists. We're not capitalists that want to just come in and take the goodies from their country and leave them broke. We would side with the Bolivians rising up against the government of Bolivia, or anti-American, because we believe the transnational corporations of the United States are robbers and thieves, and we agree with non-whites in other countries.
But help me understand this then. Is this country, the United States, is it a white country?
It started out that way.
And so when you talk about giving these other groups their own country, you're not talking about giving them a place in this country.
Well, at one time that was discussed. It's still a possibility. I mean, but now it's becoming a problem because we've let 15 million non-white Hispanics, Mexicans come into the country, and they're drowning us. And so I don't see any other way that it's going to break out into violence sooner or later, unfortunately. It could have been solved if the government would have kept the borders straight like they should have, but now it's just getting to be a zoo.
Is the goal here then to someday achieve a completely white society, an exclusive white society in the United States?
Well, it would be nice, but the goal at the moment is to survive as a race. We're only about less than 10% of the world population, the entire white race. Everybody acts like we're a majority. We've been a minority for a long time, but now, as every decade goes by, we lose more and more population. So we're fighting for our lives, the white race, but most of the white people don't seem to realize that.
What does any of this have to do with federal judges?
Federal judges have handed down the most anti-white decisions of anything. Even the executive hasn't been as hard on the race as federal judges. We had the integration thing and civil rights.
The executive being the president?
No, I'm talking about the federal judges
that
have made all those rulings. And in every case, whether you like it or not, the white race suffered. In other words, people were replaced by non-whites. Affirmative action affirmed by federal judges, to where non-whites were put ahead of white people. And when we have an initiative to stop the immigration of undocumented people into California, it's a federal judge that knocks it out. You see, every step of the way. I don't have a list, but it would be a book, the decisions of federal judges that go against the white race.
Even though many of them are white federal
judges. Look, some of our greatest enemies in this country are white. In fact, if we were to ever gain power, the purge would would be executing a lot of white people first.
Executing?
Well, they execute people all the time. We could get our federal judge, too, and we could swing the pendulum our way. You know, it depends on who's in power.
But that goes right back to the notion of, if in fact what happened in the Lefko case is the result of some part of this movement or some member of this movement, that was an execution then.
Well, it doesn't make sense because they wouldn't go after. I see no reason whatsoever that they go after the judge's husband and mother. That don't even make sense, even as a statement. If anything, they'd have gone after the judge herself, but they didn't.
If it turns out that these murders will be solved by finding someone in no way attached to any of the beliefs that you espouse, what will that say? What will that mean?
That will show how hysterical our enemies are they're pathological in trying to make everything like this come from our struggle. And I was watching Fox TV, and they were just going out of the gourd, so thrilled, almost giddy, that it had to be Matt Hale or his people or our people, and then they can get laws against us speaking and printing and doing things, you see. It's amazing. A psychiatrist that was balanced could look at this and say, gee, this is crazy. They got not one shred of evidence at all that anybody was connected with Matt Hill with anything.
A cynic might say that either way it's a win-win for this movement. If you are wrongly accused, then your enemies have done it again. And if you are rightly accused, it shows that you've taken the war to a new level.
Well, that's not altogether bad as far as a concept by the people. Remember, only 1% of any population run the country. The so-called democracy is a sham. So the public just sort of sits on the sidelines and cheers for the one who makes the most football goals, I guess. They just want to be left alone and have a job and have some beer and go to the ball game. And they don't want to get their hands dirty with running their country.
You were once associated with the Klan, right?
Yes.
No longer?
No.
Is there a Klan to speak of?
It's not nearly as big as it used to be, but it's around. I am more of the old school, going back to the old Klan, and also the White Knights of Mississippi during civil rights. Because I agree with the South. They were invaded. There was an invading army that tore up their culture in the South, and they had every right to physically fight against it. At the time, I was liberal. I thought it was horrible, and they were horrible. But after several decades, I've come to the conclusion that they weren't violent enough in the South.
Against African-Americans?
Right. The big shots sold them out. The governor sold them out. Wallace sold them out. They sold them out in Little Rock. If the people had rose up with their guns and said to the, the federal troops, if you come in here, we're going to have a war, Nixon and Eisenhower had talked about it. If they'd come up against strong resistance, they'd have backed off. But the people don't respond enough, and so it was left to just a few people in the Klan in the South, but it was not effective.
The Internet, in a way, is kind of the new hood, isn't it? You can be anonymous. You can promote your own beliefs, but maintain a significant amount of anonymity.
The Internet is pure democracy, and those who criticize the Internet don't understand democracy. It's the most democratic vehicle ever invented, to where you can get on there and say just about anything you want to say, express any ideology you want to express, and millions of people may be reading it, and it's great. Anybody tries to mess with the Internet ought to be seen as fascist.
But in a sense, hoods and white capes and burning crosses are passé. The Internet has really taken that role.
Well, even at the beginning of the Internet, even before the Internet, I was saying that was all over. And I rarely show up at anything like this because, number one, they're heavily infiltrated with agents. And number two, most of the people that turn out are people who don't do anything anyhow. They just want to turn out and hear a speech and rah-rah and jump up and down, maybe have a few beers, and they go home and don't do anything. I believe in individual action, individual work, and so having, I'd rather have 1,000 independent contractors than 10,000 of these people go to these things and just jump up and down and yell.
Independent contractors, is that the same as lone wolves?
Yeah.
The leaderless resistance?
True. I believe it's time to develop that more and more, because I think the time is coming when even me speaking to you as I speak now will be a punishable thing. I think that they will be putting people like me in prison just for talking one of these days.
You think that day is coming soon?
It's close. Not just me. Look at this fellow in Colorado, the university teacher, who spoke out free speech and said some things people didn't like. And they're trying to destroy him, and, first they try to destroy him that way, and then if they can't, they develop laws that were, like Europe. We've got one of the biggest enemies of free speech in the world is Canada. Right across the border into Canada, I was arrested and put in jail for giving a speech. And they have all these crazy laws up there that are totally anti-free speech. If they like what you're saying, they let you get away with it. But if they don't, they throw you in jail. And they just deported Ernst Zundel to Germany because they didn't like what he printed. They didn't like his views. So that is right there in Canada. It's just north of us and could be here very quickly. It's coming. It's all over Europe. Like they said, you couldn't have a swastika flag. Wow, give me a break. So what? What's that, are they that afraid of the swastika flag that they have to make it a international crime to have a swastika flag?
Are you born and raised in Indiana?
Yes.
And is your family still here?
A lot of them, yes.
And did some of this belief come about in your childhood in Indiana? I mean, how...
No. I was quite liberal in school. Very liberal. And I was pretty liberal up to the time I was in California. Well, but what happened in California, they passed the Rumford Fair Housing Bill and said you did not have control over who you sold your house to. That if a black person come and wanted to buy your house, if they had the money, you had to sell it to them. I said that was the beginning of the end right there. And then I was there at the time of the Watts riots, and I saw what was going on. I said, this is getting out of hand.
So it was really the method, you were forged sort of in that sort of crucible.
In California, not in Indiana, no.
Tell me about your rings.
Well, this is the wolf, which we have a high regard for the wolf and the way he operates.
The lone wolf.
Yes, but also wolves too run in packs too. They're not always just lone wolves.
Timothy McVeigh was a wolf.
Yes. Yes, he was. And Paul Revere was a lone wolf. It's all the way you look at it. This is a Viking. This is a copy of a ring from the Wehrmacht division of the Waffen-SS. And that has the Viking thunderbolts, the Viking head, and it has a swastika here.
For so many people in this country, the swastika is an absolutely abhorrent symbol.
Well, I don't care. I like it. And so I'll use it. I don't go around waving the flag, but I'll tell you one thing: when it comes to celebrating Martin Luther King's birthday or Mexican holidays, like a lot of my neighbors do, I've been seen taking that swastika flag out and hanging on the front of my house just to let them know that if we're going to be diverse, let's really be diverse. But the swastika is ancient, and now even the Hindus are having a fight about it because they don't want to have the swastika. The Indians had a swastika. Adolf Hitler was a Johnny-come-lately using the swastika.
Do you feel that you are under increased scrutiny because of what happened in Chicago to Judge Lefkoe's family?
I haven't seen the FBI for about 13 years when the last time they came around. And, if they come around with a warrant, whoops, I gotta go. But if they don't, I have nothing to say, and that's what I tell people. That's the way you talk to them. Be polite to them. Never lie to them, like Martha Stewart did. If I could have been her advisor, she'd have never gone to prison.
But she didn't consult you.
She didn't, no.
If you mention the name Tom Metzger with ADL, they say he's a dangerous man.
If you say Tom Metzger to the ADL says you are a dangerous man.
Well, to them, I hope I am a dangerous man, but to me, the ADL and its worldwide apparatus of the B'nai B'rith and the Zionists, they're far more dangerous than Tom Metzger could ever be. And you can ask a hell of a lot of people in the Middle East, and they tell you the same thing.
Is the ADL one of your enemies?
Yeah, they are. Not the most powerful, because the most powerful is in Washington, D.C., but they're an agitator, they're a problem, they're a nuisance. They like to get people that may have had activities with us years ago and have them go around and make speeches and turn them over and pay them, and so they do that. There's, like this deal with a trademark, that was a silly thing to do, and it was mean-spirited. Matt Hale had inherited that whole operation from Ben Klassen. He had it ever since 71. But the ADL went all the way out there to Ashland, Oregon, and found some small little nondescript little outfit that said, oh, that, and they encouraged them that was a trademark. And all this came out of that.
You think it was a setup?
Of course. They do that all the time. And they were involved in my prosecution in Portland, too. So...
When you say the ultimate enemy is in Washington, who is that?
Anybody who opposes and does anything that is injurious to the white race. And there's plenty of them up there. I can't think of hardly anybody in the Congress or Senate who isn't doing things that are injurious to the long-range interests of the common white people, working class in this country.
Then the list of your enemies is enormous.
Yeah, but there's a... That list, the list of people who find those same people as enemies, is becoming enormous. I mean, when they're trying to take away and mess up Social Security and convince the American people to put their money into the stock market, that's insane. I mean, that's the injurious to millions of white people.
How old are you now, Mr. Metcalf?
66.
And do you think in your lifetime you will realize the dream that you have of a singular, special, separate place for the white race?
I'm only concerned with their survival at this time, where they're at the end of this, and what they call it, or what country they call it, or how they operate it, I don't know. I'm more concerned right now of the hot war that's brewing in all the countries to save the white race and convince it it's got to fight and quit laying down and taking a beating. And don't apologize, and they got to get off this guilt trip. The white race is afflicted with a guilt ideology, that the white race is guilty of everything bad. Well, if you look at the Encyclopedia of Technology, you'll find that these people around the world are benefiting tremendously from the white race. And if it had to been for the white race, they wouldn't have anything.
So when it comes to this one case in Chicago, is it significant?
It's confusing, more than significant, because it's, you know, again, it wasn't the judge. It was people who had really nothing to do with it. And even if it was a judge, I don't think the message would have been that powerful to make any change. So there again, I don't think that violence for violence sake works.
When does it?
Well, we had a few Arabs do a couple of violent things that I think it was worth it to them.
You mean the
World Trade Center? Now that is an operation.
I mean an operation to be copied?
A military operation. And even military men have said that that operation was genius. But let me tell you this, to show you about the FBI, I call them famous but incompetent. The man, one of the men who ran the plane into the World Trade Center lived about 50 miles from me in an apartment building in La Mesa, California. There was an FBI informant living in the same apartment. A friend of mine who was a racial activist lived just a half mile away. And the FBI and all the police had been following him for 2 or 3 years because he was putting up racial posters on the telephone pole. But here, just a few blocks away, was the man preparing to run the plane into the World Trade Center. Now, do you trust that kind of agency to protect you?
It sounds as though you admire the people who attack the World
Trade Center. I admire soldiers. Whether I agree with them or not, I admire soldiers. They're not cowards. People who give their lives for what they believe in, no matter who they are, or even if they're my enemy, I can't find fault with them, because it takes an extremely brave person to kill themselves in the act of a military operation.
You've been called in various ways the godfather of the skinheads. Are skinheads soldiers?
I was friendly to the skinheads way back when they were skinheads mainly in England, because they were helping the National Front protect their rallies. And so it sort of came about that way. And then I was one of the only ones who supported the skinheads while the right wing would use them and have them protect their parades, but then they talked badly about them. But I was the only one who said, yes, we need all the young people we can get, whether they got shaved heads or long hair. They can be hippies with guns for all I care. I just want young blood. And they were young blood.
And they ended up being kind of the enforcers of the movement, didn't they? Or were encouraged to be?
Well, maybe somewhat, but some of the right wing misled them too much into individual acts of violence that didn't help the movement at all. I've encouraged them for about 20 years now to forget the shaved heads and get to college and dig into the system and bury yourself in there. Then it's when you'll be valuable to us.
Your shaved head make you a skinhead?
I'm just bald. So that's easy for me to say, I'm the grandfather of skinheads.
Just one other question. Because so much is so wrong with this country, why not just leave?
Because other countries have systems that in many ways are worse. If I was a young man, I would leave this country. I'd probably go to Russia. I think that there's hope in Russia for a reemergence of the white race. There may be other places if I was a young man I would go, but not being able to speak the language, I just think I would not be effective if I went there.
And so if you could, you would leave?
Yes. If I was young and spoke the language, say of Russian, I think I would immigrate to Russia.
Any other place that you see?
However, I'm going to end up fighting it out here in the United States. I'm not going anyplace.
Because you see yourself as a warrior?
Well, I do have allegiance to the white people of this country and to the land my forefathers fought and died for.
I keep thinking if this does connect the movement to the left coast things, white people died in this.
Yes, and they died in the World Trade Center. What do they call that in war? Collateral damage? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see who did this and why they did it.
But it's not causing you to shed any tears?
Well, not directly. I don't remember these people shedding tears when the federal people blew the brains out of Vicki Weaver at Ruby Ridge. I don't remember the federal judges crying about the people being burnt alive in Waco. There was no federal judge that said the military's got to get out of there and don't do that, did they? They didn't cry. So if they don't cry about when our people or our friends or other people die, or the common man who is shot down and the women raped in the streets every day of this country, why should we cry for them? We have no reason to.
No. It's a warm thing. We might need to get a slower shot of your rings because I think you were faster than Vince was. How old are those?
Well, this one's about 20 years old, I guess. It's not an original. And this was, anybody can buy these in a lot of the stores.
Can you show me each side, sir?
Of this one? For me, that symbol is?
That's the Thunderbolts. It's the Viking symbols that the Germans use them. I think the SS use them, I think.
And then the center figure is?
It's a Viking. The Viking warrior with the helmet and the horns.
And then the other side is the swastika.
Swastika, yeah. The rounded type. Sauces come in many forms.
I imagine your neighbors don't cheer you on when you bring your swastika flag up.
Well, I've got illegal aliens living in the house beside me, and they've destroyed the house in less than 2 years. There's not a blade of grass in the front yard. There's 15 cars, swimming pools full of garbage. Took a house that was a beautiful home and just trashed it. On the other side, I've got a druggie that's living with a Mexican gal, white man living with a Mexican gal, and they don't say anything.
So they're not quite engaged with you on any level.
I don't harass them. Except when they play their Mexican music too loud, and then I take World War II German music out and play that, and we usually come to an agreement that we'll both turn it down.
No truce, audio truce. In terms of your ability to live, you're still getting most of your money taken away from you by the federal government?
I don't talk about my money. The ADL and Morris Dees would love for me to talk about my money.
Why is that?
Well,
because they're still trying to access it?
The problem was at the time they went after me, they saw me as the most strongly emerging leader in the country. And they said, we got to cut this guy down.
Uh-huh.
And he hasn't committed any crimes. He doesn't get involved in conspiracies. So how are we going to stop this guy? We'll get him on the civil thing, even though I was never even questioned.
And this was a state civil court, right, Mr. Metzger? This wasn't federal.
And so that's the way they went after me. In fact, the chief of security for the Southern Poverty Law Center they searched all over to find a way to get at me, you know, and finally decided on this thing.
Do you find your do you believe that your computer is hacked into? I mean, do you have
over this shoulder?
I mean, do you feel that you are under some level of surveillance all the time?
Well, I consider any form of communication
monitored on some level.
I always assume everything is monitored. Then that way you don't have a problem.
So you only met Matt Hale once, right? In the course of all of this,
right.
What year would that have been?
2002 or 2003, wasn't it?
2 or 3.
Yeah. Yeah, right up here in Osceola, Indiana.
And the reason for the meeting was?
There was a Klan group put on a gathering, and it had all different groups came in. And so I wanted to come down here to Indiana anyhow, so they invited me, and so I gave them a speech.
How big is the, like, what kind of number would you assign to, I mean, do we call it a movement on this spectrum? I mean, is it a movement?
I don't call it, that's the right wing. We call that the Baal movement. We're in a struggle. Revolutionary struggle is what we call.
So in the struggle, how many foot soldiers exist in the struggle?
It's impossible for me to say because nobody carries a membership card. They don't go to meetings. They don't wear uniforms. They don't wear badges. They're the people that work with you, the guy next door. They're encouraged to be covert.
So it's purposeful anonymity.
Right, and so I couldn't tell you, because so many of them are out there that they don't talk to me, because obviously if they communicate with me, their cover's blown.
Carol, can you talk about 15 seconds, please?
In terms of the public, I mean, you've gone from a monthly to a quarterly. There are plenty of people, and maybe this is just the ADL, but there are plenty of people who argue that this is a shrunken, deteriorated, almost non-existent struggle, that, you know, people like you pop up, but it doesn't represent size, doesn't represent volume.
As I recall, they said that about Hitler when he had a few guys marching in the street. There were a bunch of comical people. And I remember Fidel Castro when he had this little group up in the Sierra Madre, and everybody said, we'll squash him like a bug. All over the little Mao Zedong, I had nothing. So this means nothing. In fact, I hope my enemies sleep well and think that.
Can you hang on for just a few more minutes? Let's do this in reverse shot.
Sure.
We need to slide you this way.
You're all right for time, Mr. Smith?
Yeah.
Don reached you. Through the internet.
Move you up to
toilet, sir. Sure. As we write to stay in tomorrow, is there a number I can...
California?
Or any...
You have to go this way.
I'm sorry.
Significantly.
I have to go to my left, not ideologically necessarily, but physically.
Well, most of you people are far enough to the left of what it is.
I'm wrong about that.
Well,
I think there are more people worried about their stock options than you can imagine.
Well, that's capitalism, not to the right.
Well, so anyway, give me telephone numbers for you, Mr. Metzger.
Well, you can reach me after next Sunday. It'd be at 760. Carry a computer with me wherever I go.
And give me your email.
WARMetzger@AOL.com.
Do you remember offhand your family's number here?
It's 267-3319.
3319, that's 217, Eric?
574.
574. Used to be 217, didn't it?
No.
No?
Yeah.
I don't
know.
Yes.
What about while you were there?
And were you able to take some stills, too?
Yes, I was.
Okay. What do you need to
do? I need you to just be quiet for just a second, please. I need it because I'd still like to be over his shoulder, so a little bit of his shoulder.
Limited
okay?
Video opportunities here, and I know you didn't want to be...
You guys, you need to move your chair up a little bit.
Certainly.
There we go.
Okay. We've already rearranged the Ramada Inn pretty significantly.
Oh, I've seen this 100 times. You know, I did my own television show for 13 years.
Yes, we put it in a documentary once years ago. It was Race and Reason.
Right.
So we did a doc...
1985.
Interviewed Richard Butler. This is before, you know, the federal case. Didn't do Jim Ellison. I think he wouldn't talk to us.
We went down to the compound, but I'm glad you didn't talk to him. He's a traitor.
Did he flip? Did he become a federal witness?
Yeah, he worked with me. And then he went back to that Elohim camp down in Arkansas.
Right, the Moab border?
Yeah, and I went there a couple of times with friends of mine. And he married
flatten that light out for just a little bit. Somehow.
I think he's still down there.
He was in prison for a fair amount of time, wasn't he?
There's two of them. You see, the one is really a government advocate that worked with him. You got Ellison and you got the other guy. I forget his name. I've heard him on radio stations going around the country.
Now, is there the belief, the place where in the revolution, it's going to be the place of greatest concentration for the white race? Remember that discussion right around all the covenant sword and honor of the Lord stuff? The Moab border formed one of the lines of the parallelogram in which there was a space in the United States that was really being seen as a target, as a place for safety for white people if it did come to civil war.
Well, there's no place of safety for the white people if it comes to civil war.
But you know what I'm talking about? It was promoted.
Yeah, all that religious stuff.
Is it all the identity movement stuff? Okay.
We did promote for some time in the 80s the Northwest imperative that we'll all move down to the Northwest and make a stand. But we decided Butler too against that later because I don't want to live in the Northwest because the people up there are far more liberal than they are in Southern California.
It's pretty good.
Tom Robb, did you have much association with him?
Yeah, I don't get along with Tom Robb at all. He condemned the order people who I supported. Bob Matthews, who was killed on Whidbey Island. And Tom Robb attacked those people by word, and so we had a falling out. I have nothing to do with him.
This struggle that you described is a spectrum, right?
Right.
Part of what we'll do is, I'm just going to ask some of the questions I've already answered. Please answer them again.
Sure.
We won't. But on this spectrum, you all don't agree with each other on everything, right?
All movements are like that.
So what's the uniting principle among all of the organizations?
As long as we're talking strictly the survival of the race and ideas on helping that, we all agree and we all sit in the same room and have no problem. But when they start trying to cram religion down my throat or something like that, well then I say, no, we don't go there.
What do federal judges have to do with any of that?
Federal judges have become dictators in this country where they're ruling on everything. I mean, anything significant in this country, there's a federal judge involved. So they're like the Jesuits are to the Catholic Church. They're the shock troops of the federal government. And so I appealed my case in Portland all the way to the appeals courts there, to the federal court, 9th District, all the way to the Supreme Court. Not one court would even hear my appeal based on freedom of speech and so forth. Now, I'm not saying that it means, the one thing is everything, but anyhow, that's my experience.
In the last week, have you been contacted by any federal agency, the FBI, U.S. Attorney's Office?
No, I haven't.
Do you know anyone who has?
Like I say, I think there was one lady that told me on the Internet that they'd been to her house and that she unfortunately let them in. Too many of these people don't listen to me and they talk to them. And they're not there because they want to prove you innocent. I never met a cop who came out to try to prove me innocent of anything.
The federal government, in your view, is it all corrupt?
Well, there's individuals in there, I guess, that try, but everyone that I talk to, we've had people in legislative positions next to the congressmen in Washington and so forth. And once in a while, we still do. And they feed back the information. They say, this is such a screwed-up mess in Washington that there's no real hope of straightening it out on anything at this time.
What you write and what you say and the positions you take, do they incite
violence?
It's hard to say.